This is Sportscaster.com's Open Mic with Johnny Kane on 760 WJR, featuring sports commentary and stories brought to you by the most compelling rising stars in sports broadcasting. Here's your host, Johnny Kane.
Hi, everybody, and welcome into Sportscaster.com's Open Mic. I'm your host, Johnny Kane. Really good to have you with us here over the next hour on WJR. And if you're new to the program, I think you'll appreciate what the show's all about. And that's giving a voice to the next generation of great young storytellers. You know, Sportscaster is a platform for broadcasters, whether they're still in high school or in college, to enterprise stories that are relevant in today's sports world, and then to share those stories over the air, something that typically hasn't been available before. And one of those young voices is Ben Frakes. Ben Frakes is a student majoring in communications at Michigan State University, and he had a chance to sit down with somebody who I've come to know pretty well over the last 10 years covering Detroit Tigers baseball, although Dan Dickerson's career with the Tigers stretches deeper than that. You know, Dan's become a beloved voice here in the Detroit sports landscape, and he learned from one of the all-time greats, and not just all-time great broadcasters, one of the all-time great human beings, and that is Ernie Harwell, someone who I put on the Mount Rushmore of play-by-play voices. So Ben Frakes, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. And I did truly learn quite a bit from Dan Dickerson. That was a great experience.
Yeah, he's a great guy to learn from, you know, and we all learn from others, as Dan obviously had an opportunity to learn from Ernie Harwell. You know, when people ask about working in professional sports, depending on what sport that is, you know, there aren't a ton of jobs. And so there are only 30 major league teams in the world, meaning there are only 30 voices on the radio for those who narrate those games. And Dan Dickerson, who worked at WJR in the mid-90s, and then when Ernie retired at the end of the 02 season, that's when he became the full-time play-by-play announcer for the Detroit Tigers. So I know that was really the essence of your interview, was talking to him about his relationship with Harwell. What did you find out?
Yeah, well, the most interesting thing that he told me was when he first got the job in the radio booth at the Tigers, Ernie actually gave him a chance to do an inning in the very last game of the season. And that experience for him was, I know, was a big game changer in his career. Like, he really got to learn and, you know, just do it himself, which is such a crazy opportunity, you know. And obviously he took it and ran with it.
Yeah, that would make me nervous. It's one thing to get an audition to do an inning, but when Ernie Harwell is sitting next to you, I would imagine you'd be even more nervous. Is there anything you learned from Dan that you'll take with you as you pursue a career in broadcasting?
Well, I think there's a lot of things that you can learn from Dan. I think one thing that really stood out to me was showing up and preparing like every day is your first day, making sure that you are locked in.
Yeah, preparation is really what it's all about. You know, the one thing I always see with Dan, he's got his notepad out, notating as I do, and he has great penmanship also for keeping a scorebook. But he's always prepared, always goes into every game with the right amount of preparation. But one of the things that Dan has told me, and he'll tell the viewers too, is about how do you disseminate that information and put it into a broadcast effortlessly. So I'm looking forward to hearing it. Here's Ben Frakes and the voice of the Tigers, Dan Dickerson.
Once you got to the Tigers organization, you had the opportunity to study and work alongside Ernie Harwell at the beginning of your time. What did you learn from that experience?
So working with Ernie was amazing. So you know, realize there aren't obviously many of these jobs that I do, but in that small subset of people who are doing this job, play-by-play or analyst for the team they grew up watching, it's an even smaller number, right? There aren't many. So it's pretty neat that I get to do these games for the team that I grew up watching. So I grew up listening to Ernie Harwell, and he just made you want to listen to games. That's why I love baseball and radio, even in the bad years. And believe me, in the 70s, there were some pretty lean years. But the 68 season got me hooked on baseball on the radio. There weren't many games on TV back then. I just loved how he called a game. I loved how he sounded. And then to get to work with him in 2000 was just amazing. I mean, we were doing pre and post game for Tigers. Steve Courtney and I with Tom Mazzaway. So I was at the ballpark. I'd gotten in touch with the Tigers or just let them know, hey, if Ernie's ever sick or misses a game, he'd miss like 2 in 50 years. I'm here practicing, ready to step in if need be. And that didn't ever come about. But what happened was in that last game at Tiger Stadium, this is a long story, but long story short, because we were there doing pre and post and the last game at Tiger Stadium was, you know, a big deal. It was on WJR. 6 a.m. to midnight coverage for the last game, wall-to-wall coverage. So I got a chance to sit in with Ernie for the last three innings because Jim Price, my partner for a long time and his partner at the time, was going to get ready for the postgame ceremony. And then Ernie gave me one inning of play-by-play in those last three innings, which is amazing every time I think about it. I mean, this is last three innings on a historic day, and he's giving one of them to me. That helped get me in the booth the next year when they decided they wanted to add a third person to the booth. It was the first time they'd ever had a three-man booth. It was always a two-man booth, but they wanted to add somebody for the middle three innings of play-by-play, and that's how I got in. And then being able to sit by him or sit next to him and watch, why did he sound so good the last broadcast in 2002 as he did any other year I can remember listening? Because he just loved what he did, and he loved the people around the game, and he just brought that energy to the ballpark every day. So in my first year, when I'm like, oh, can I do this over 162? You know, just being around him really helped set me up for success when he retired, and then I got to be the guy after that.
Well, from that time to now, this upcoming season will be your 26th as the radio broadcaster for the Detroit Tigers. Would you say that you've changed over that time as a broadcaster?
It's a constant challenge. I love describing a game well, and that's the job on radio. It's very different on TV, but I love doing that. And every game is a challenge to do it well. And I'll never attain probably the level I want, but it's fun to try to get there. To me, it's always been the same way to prepare, right? I want all the information. I want way too much. But that's, to me, a better way. I think Dick Enberg described it one time. You'd rather have way too much. You're only going to use a tiny percentage of the stuff you prepared. But it's that preparation. It's all the stuff you don't use that makes the broadcast better. It sounds kind of weird, but that's kind of how I've always looked at it. And then it becomes, how do you blend it? And that makes it endlessly interesting to me that every night the information is going to fit together a little bit differently. You never know where your conversation with your analyst is going to go. It might take you in a completely different direction. And then you got to be ready for that. So that's the beauty and the fun. And to me, the kind of the art of the radio style of play-by-play and the radio broadcast, you're weaving it all together. And so then I've always been a numbers guy. So a real challenge for me is to, how do you blend all the new numbers? I want to make sure that I'm up on the new numbers, but you cannot ever overstat a broadcast. You will lose people. So my job is then becomes filtering, okay, what's useful among this information to help us understand what makes this guy good or where he's struggling, but also leads to conversations with coaches, managers, players about what they're working on or the, you know, how hard it is to hit in Major League Baseball. I mean, that's how I like to use the numbers, but that's a constant process. It's like, okay, what's useful? What helps us tell the story of what's going on in front of us? What adds some insight into this great game of baseball?
You know, I love what Dan says about wanting all the information. You always rather have too much information. And really, you could have the best voice on the planet, but if your preparation is lacking, it doesn't matter. And the great ones are able to blend those numbers and the information effortlessly into a broadcast. And it reminds me of what the great Vin Scully once said. He said, statistics are used much like a drunk uses a lamppost for support, not illumination. To Ben Frakes and Dan Dickerson, thank you guys. The next young man we'll be hearing from is a senior at Saline High School just outside of Ann Arbor, Michigan, named Cody Stedman. Cody will be attending Washtenaw Community College, majoring in journalism. You know, and there are a number of different interviewing styles on radio. And just like musical taste, the variety is what makes the world work. And I like listening to NPR. I generally like that interviewing style. And Cody Stedman, I think you bring a little bit of that flavor. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Johnny. I really did learn from the best through my CTE course that I'm taking at Saline High School through the South and West Washtenaw Consortium. It really has given me such a huge opportunity to take a deep dive into the world of broadcast journalism.
Yeah, it's fabulous. And especially when you get opportunities at a younger age to start to develop and then hone it, trying to get the right cadence, the pauses, the inflection, you know, you've got a good base for where you are right now. And I thought it was cool. You had an opportunity to interview Jamie Edmonds, who's a sports reporter. She's been in this market for more than a decade now. And I know a lot of our listeners may know Jamie as a co-host on WJR and also a contributor at WDIV, which is Local 4 here in Detroit. What did you learn about Jamie Edmonds?
What I learned about Jamie is that she really took a route thinking that she always wanted to do something with sports and took journalism as a good opportunity to report on what she has been hearing. And after gaining her master's, she soon found out that sports journalism was just for her after going to WDIV.
You know, one of the things Jamie talks about with you is, and I fully endorse this, it's say yes to everything. And I always say when opportunity knocks, don't bother with the peephole. Especially in this industry, you know, sometimes a path you may lay out, it'll still move forward, but sometimes it takes some unexpected turns, right? And I think that's kind of how her career went.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
Here's Cody Stedman from Saline High School with Jamie Edmonds.
The voice we hear on the sideline, in the booth, or in the studio, sports broadcasters have always helped emphasize and lead their viewers about the sport they're covering. One of them helps us in our waking hours. I'm Cody Stedman from Sportscaster, and today we talk with sports reporter from WDIV Detroit and talk show co-host for WJR's JR Morning Show, Jamie Edmonds, on her time in the broadcasting industry so far and how her journey really started. Jamie, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you for having me. What an intro.
So to start off, what got you interested in journalism?
Well, it started with my love of sports and going to games with my dad. I just loved hockey. I'm from Pittsburgh. Don't hold that against me, but I do love the Penguins. They're my top, maybe Steelers second. But just this love of sports from going to games and seeing greatness, the best of the best, Jerome Bettis, Mario Lemieux, et cetera. And then I said, how can I parlay that into some kind of job?
I note that I have that you went to University of Delaware and majored in journalism. One of the things that I saw on there that you won the 2002 figure skating championship. Talk to us a little bit about that.
You did your homework here. That's definitely true. Yeah, I went to University of Delaware because I wanted to continue my skating career. And I was on the collegiate team when I was there. And so I'm a freshman on this team of really good skaters. And we went to, ironically, University of Michigan for nationals. And we skated against a lot of teams. A lot of the Ivy League schools back when I started were involved. And what happens in collegiate skating is you perform alone. And then you get points for the team. And so I skated there. And through our team efforts, we won that year. So yeah, I'm a national champion and pretty proud of it.
Great to hear. You then went on to and graduated from University of Delaware in journalism. And then you continued on to Northwestern in journalism and broadcast journalism. What made you want to pursue sports journalism beside your interest in sports?
Well, sports is fun. I mean, it's not life or death, and it can really rally a community. It could, you know, get people all on the same page who aren't normally on the same page. I just love sports for the way it can do that. And when I was at University of Delaware, I wrote for the school paper and I did all kinds of journalism, but I particularly loved covering sports. And I had a really great professor back at Delaware who was a writer for the Philadelphia Inquirer, and he took us to a Flyers game. So you sat in the press box, watched the game, wrote a post-game article. And so that sort of fueled my love for wanting to do it in the sports world. And I remember going back and forth with my parents about which journalism school to go to, because Northwestern doesn't specialize in sports. It's the journalism that Northwestern is most proud of. News background, but that was the best school. So I went to Northwestern knowing I always had sports in the back of my mind.
And as you went along with that into your jobs, you switched around a little bit. I believe you went to WILX for a little bit and you went to the Flint area. But then in 2013, you joined WDIV Detroit for sports reporting. What made this job stand out from the rest?
I remember thinking it was such a big deal that I was interviewing at WDIV. This was one of the top NBC stations in the country. Bernie Smilovitz was a legend, and I remember he called me, and I was nervous. I wanted to put on a good show for him because I just realized that the history of WDIV was strong and that would be a great place for me to go. Plus, I had been in the state of Michigan for my previous two jobs. I've been covering these teams and I knew that Detroit was such a huge sports town. It was just so rich in history of sports and I knew I wanted to be here.
If you were to meet someone wanting to be someone just like you, what would you recommend to them?
I would say don't pigeonhole yourself, because I always knew I wanted to do sports, but I went down a path that included news. It included doing breaking news. All of that shapes you into a reporter, you know, into a fuller human being. It probably led me to WJR where I am now, which is a good spot for me. So I would say, yeah, you want to do sports and hit the ground running, email as many people as you can and try and get into that world. But it can be tough. There's no shame in starting a different path with your mind still set on your, you know, sports love or what have you. So I would say do everything, take every opportunity, say yes to everything.
Now, how did your experience as a sportscaster really translate into a talk show co-host?
Well, like I said, say yes to everything, say yes to every opportunity. I remember I was in Flint at WDEYI, and it's election day coming up. And they're like, we don't do sports on election day. You have newsy background from your Lansing days. Can you go cover the governor's race? And I remember being like all upset. No, I don't want to do this. I'm a sports person now. But I said, okay, sure. I have the background. I know the contacts in Lansing. I set up my live shot with my camera guy at the Lansing Convention Center, right next to Rod Maloney from Channel 4. And he watches what I'm doing. He's like, what are you doing right now? I said, well, I'm usually sports, but I do news sometimes, whatever. He goes, that's exactly what we're looking for at Channel 4. We need someone who can do everything. So if I would have said no to the governor's race election coverage, I may not have gotten my Channel 4 opportunity. So like I said, saying yes to everything really opens doors.
Very inspiring words to hear. Now, I have one last question for you. How has sports broadcasting changed? A lot of today's sportscasting is loud, bombastic, very opinion-driven, as opposed to like pure journalistic approach. What do you think has changed so far?
Well, I think TV shows have changed a lot. When you go to SportsCenter, NFL Network, whatever these networks are, they have time to fill that's 24 hours long. So there's a lot of opinion when it comes to sports. And what hits on social media is a lot of like the loud, as you said, bombastic people who have these like hard and fast thoughts about different games and players and everything. I don't even know if sometimes these people believe what they're saying, but it makes for good viral moments. I think that has definitely changed a lot. Because it used to be back in the day, you'd call the highlights. People had not seen those highlights. They don't know what the score is yet. They can't Google it. They don't follow on social media. And it was delivering what happened in the game, not giving your opinion. So yeah, that's all changed. But when you're covering the game, that's the same, I would say. It's still asking a player a question, getting the answer, putting a story together, watching a play on the sidelines, going to a press conference with the coach. But I think day of, it feels very similar to when I started.
Thank you so much for joining us here today, Jamie.
Thank you for having me and good luck in your journey.
Well, you learn something new every day. Jamie Edmonds, former national champion figure skater, now covering Detroit sports on WDIV and WJR. You know, they say timing is everything. And for athletes coming up in this day and age, they have available to them a share of the pie that wasn't available to student athletes in the past. You know, name, image, and likeness has changed the game entirely. And our next guest is a young man named Aiden Novak, senior from Lake Orion High School. Good to have you on the show, Aiden.
Great to be here, Johnny. Thanks for having me.
You spoke with author Christy Dosh, who has a new book coming out this summer. The book's title is The Athlete's NIL Playbook. What can you tell us about it?
Well, it's a really hot topic right now. It's affecting a lot of high schoolers in the recruiting business and a lot of athletes in the transfer portal. And she said that they basically just go for the biggest bag, essentially, as opposed to going to the best school that fits them. And the book she's writing, Athletes NIL Playbook, is the guidance for those athletes, what they should be doing, not just chasing the money, but chasing the best experience in college for them. That gives them a good balance between the money and actually playing the sport that they love and having fun with it.
It's interesting to me because it's always easy for us to have an idea of like, oh man, that individual might be making the wrong decision. But then if it was actually you or me, you know, what would we do?
Right.
It's very tempting, especially when you're a young person trying to figure it all out. You never want to chase dollars specifically just to chase them, but it's sometimes it can be so attractive that it changes the course of your life.
Exactly.
So what is it that you want to do full time when you graduate?
So I'm committed to Delta College right now for baseball, and I want to go into sports journalism. Ideally, I'd like to be an on-air commentator. That's like my dream job. But the future right now is baseball for now and journalism later down the road.
Very good. Does NIL, does that stuff apply to you yet?
No, not yet. Not yet. I'm not getting offered anything from a community college, but it's all right. I'm going to play the sport that I love and I'm getting to do the major that I want to do. So,
yeah, I remember there was a great quote from Vince Lombardi. When I was in high school in art class, we did calligraphy and we did our favorite quote. And there was a Vince Lombardi quote that said, potential means you ain't done it yet. And nowadays, it seems like a lot of student athletes are profiting on their potential before they've done it yet. So I'm not sure that Vince Lombardi would have been on board with NIL if he were still around today. Here's Lake Orion High School's Aiden Novak with author Christy Dosh.
Today, we welcome Christy Dosh, author of the Athletes NIL Playbook. Christy is a former corporate attorney and currently teaches undergraduate and graduate NIL courses at the University of Florida. I'm a huge fan of college sports, and NIL has been a hot topic recently, impacting the decisions of many high school recruits and players in the transfer portal for all sports. So, Ms. Dosh, thank you for taking the time to do this. And the first question I have for you is, what inspired you to write the Athletes NIL Playbook, and what gap in education are you hoping to fill with this book?
Yeah, so I've really been following name, image, and likeness before it was really a thing. In 2021, the NCAA, as well as the NAIA and the NJCAA, all the big major college sports organizations changed their rules to allow athletes to monetize their NIL. So I started paying attention to it way back then and kind of followed through. And as I knew it was going to be happening, I really wanted to help educate athletes because I am a lawyer and I've sort of been around this for a long time. So I wanted to help athletes take advantage of this and have been doing so since it started. And the book kind of grew out of all the advice I've been giving over the years so that I have something that high school athletes or youth athletes and their parents could sit down and go through to really understand how to set themselves up for NIL success down the road.
That's amazing. All right. For student athletes navigating NIL deals, what are the biggest mistakes you see them making and how can they avoid them?
Oh, the lawyer in me wants to say the biggest mistake is not getting a written contract. And I know that athletes don't always want to do that and that sometimes it feels too expensive to have a lawyer look at something. But having a written contract is so important because it really outlines the obligations that both parties have. And when something goes wrong, it gives you kind of a roadmap for how to solve the problem or how to get someone else to help you solve the problem. And so not only do you need to have a written contract, but you do need to have somebody look at it. And luckily, there are some really amazing resources out there that don't cost athletes any money. There are law schools on campuses that offer free clinics where athletes can get advice. There's an organization that is forming to represent athletes, athletes.org, that I believe they allow their members to have a certain number of legal hours where they can get contracts reviewed. I have a Facebook group where people can drop stuff in and get advice. So there are free resources out there.
What role do universities and athletic departments play in preparing athletes for NIL opportunities? And what should athletes do if their school isn't providing enough guidance?
It's really evolved. In the beginning, schools were providing, I would call it a minimum level of education. They were mostly partnering with third-party companies that provided education, primarily through apps and other platforms where athletes could go on and watch videos that would teach them about different aspects of NIL. I didn't find that athletes really availed themselves of that. They didn't go on and watch the videos. I mean, they don't have time between classes and their sport. I wish that they had done more of that, but they didn't. I've gone on many campuses and spoken. I think that does a little bit better because you've got the athletes in person. They can interact with you. They can ask questions. There are more and more of us who are sort of educators in this space that athletic departments are using, but also athletic departments are hiring more of their own staff. So most schools at this point, especially at the Division I and at the Power 5, Power 4 level, have a NIL director, and many of them have several people with NIL titles, and even some people that are specific to one team, like football or men's basketball or women's basketball. And so there are more people on campus on an everyday basis to help athletes now too. And things continue to evolve. Now we've got revenue sharing, we think, coming in the summer of 2025. And so there will have to be education around that as well. So I think athletic departments are trying to evolve as quickly as they can to provide that education to athletes. But athletes sometimes have to seek it out for themselves too.
Right, right. How do you see the NIL landscape evolving over the next few years? And what advice would you give to young athletes who want to stay ahead of the curve?
Yeah, I think that the beginning is over now, and we've entered a place where everybody sort of knows what NIL is, at least at the college level. I still run into a lot of high school and youth athletes who don't understand it yet. But I think at the college level, there's a better understanding of it now. People sort of know where you can go to find deals on things like NIL marketplaces. They know how to work with the NIL collectives at their school. Brands are more comfortable working in this space and doing deals with student athletes now. You know, I think we'll just continue to see that grow because the studies and the evidence show that athletes are incredible marketers and that they help brands move product. So I think you're going to see more and more brands not only come into this space, but invest at higher levels than they are already. So I think the NIL marketplace is really healthy and is just going to continue to grow. And I think where the change is with revenue sharing coming in, because I think that schools are going to be getting more involved in NIL and helping identify opportunities for athletes. For example, a lot of athletic departments are forming their own marketing agencies, or they're partnering with third-party marketing agencies to help get these deals. And when they're recruiting student athletes, they're sort of talking about the whole financial picture. Like, here's what we will offer you in revenue sharing. You know, here are the NIL opportunities we think are going to be available for you. Maybe even here's some brands we've already identified, or here's what our marketing agency has already put together that they're going to go out with for you. So I do think moving forward, you'll see more athletic department involvement, whereas in the beginning, they really stayed very hands-off.
Well, this is really fun. I learned a whole lot from you about NIL. I'm definitely a lot more interested in this now. So thank you again for taking the time to do this.
Absolutely. You're welcome.
Christy Dosh's new book, The Athlete's NIL Playbook, The Complete Guide to Owning and Profiting from Your Name, Image, and Likeness, hits bookshelves this July. From NIL to NCAA, we look at Michigan's run to the Big Ten title and how Dusty May has the Wolverines poised for the NCAA tournament. We have a special guest joining us for our final segment tonight. This young man is only in the fifth grade, but he has real gumption, I'm telling you. Ryder Sloan, our youngest guest to date. Tell everybody where you go to school, Ryder.
I go to Pierce Elementary.
Okay.
In Birmingham.
Okay. What is it that you hope to do when you get older?
I've been thinking about continuing my dad's business or just reporting and maybe coaching a football team or basketball team.
You put together really well, man, for 11 years old. I love it. You can do all those things. That's the beauty of it.
Yeah.
Who have you interviewed in your short time on this earth?
I've interviewed Desmond Howard, John Wengler, Jordan Morgan, Will Johnson, Colson Loveland, Donovan Edwards. I've had a great experience so far.
Yeah, those are some notable names, being able to interview people like Desmond Howard and Donovan Edwards. I mean, that's kind of like the next best thing, right?
Yeah. As you may know, I injured my knee recently and I'm just coming back from it. And I don't know if sports is in my future. So sportscasting is definitely the next best thing for me. It's maybe just as good as playing the game.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. And I feel like the one thing about it, especially if you play, even if you don't play at the highest level, if you have an understanding of being involved in organized sports, or even with you at your age coming back from an injury, now there's relatability. So when you do talk to athletes, it's like you have an understanding of what that's like and what it's like trying to come back, right?
Yeah. And in my opinion, if you love the game, it doesn't matter what level you play at.
That's it, man. And obviously, being the youngest on the sportscaster.com platform, I know there are going to be some other big names coming up in your future. I also noticed a lot of those names are Michigan guys. So you're a big fan of the Michigan basketball program?
Well, I've been a Michigan football fan for a while, up until I saw Dusty May. Dusty May has made me into a Michigan basketball fan, and I just love the work he's doing over there.
What do you think's been the key to the turnaround for Dusty May in Ann Arbor?
I think he's very dedicated to what he does, and he gets the job done.
He's getting it done for sure, and you did a good job with this piece. Here's fifth grader Ryder Sloan on what turned the Michigan basketball season around.
Hi, I'm Ryder Sloan. What captures a young sports fan's attention? An inspirational story. One that every now and then proves that dreams can come true. One that proves that talent and hard work make for a winning combination. I'm focused on recapping just how the Michigan Wolverines head basketball coach, Dusty May, has achieved something truly remarkable and has made me a fan for life. He took the Michigan Wolverines men's basketball team from worst to best in the Big Ten, and some would say even in the nation, all in just 1 year. Last season, Michigan had only won 3 Big Ten games under their previous head coach, and under Dusty May's leadership, they won the Big Ten championship this year. Dusty May was the head coach for Florida Atlantic University from 2018 to 2024, leading the Owls to the NCAA Final Four in 2023, and was hired by Michigan in 2024, replacing Juwan Howard. How did Dusty May turn the Michigan program around in short order? First, of course, you have to bring in the right players, and Dusty May immediately set out to upgrade the team with fresh talent that included Vlad Golden, Danny Wolf, and others. Next, he had to achieve buy-in by the players that his system would lead them to a championship. Then, he had to create a culture of confidence and camaraderie, team chemistry, and a belief that they could beat anybody. And of course, he had to be a fundamentally sound coach who could prepare and coach the team both prior to and during games. Listen to this Dusty May interview excerpt conducted by Carter Lutz and Cooper Schoenberg, two rising star sportscasters on sportscaster.com, interviewed Dusty May recently, and here's Dusty in his own words explaining how and why he was able to create this great level of success in such a short period of time.
Well, the university athletic department have such great traditions themselves, and there's such a following and a pride amongst all of those associated with Michigan. But for us, there's a standard here of putting together championship caliber teams, operating in a professional manner. And it's no different today. I mean, every single morning we wake up striving to be our best, knowing that the expectations long-term are to get to Final Fours and to win Big Ten championships, but that doesn't consume us on a daily basis. And after a lot of days of everyone being connected and working towards a common goal, then you find yourself in those situations and then you have to take advantage of them.
Here's what Dusty had to say about creating the right chemistry amongst his guys.
We've had a pool of guys that we felt like had winning qualities and attributes, and they're unselfish and they were skilled. And we wanted to get a center and a point guard and then build our roster from there, because if you have an unselfish point guard and you have a center that will get guys open, that's a threat at the rim, then it makes the job much easier on the other guys on the court. So that was our process. We wanted to begin with those two things and then slowly build a roster out. And they're also like-minded. All the guys we brought in are guys from winning programs, guys that care about people, they have great hearts. And so every day, you know, it's the day-to-day conversations, it's spending time in the weight room, in the training room. And everyone in our program has been trying to expedite the process by simply just being around more and helping each other out. We have a lot of versatility and depth in our program. And now it's just us trying to figure out the best ways for us to play and the best combinations, and trying to get these guys to really utilize their own gifts and superpowers and see if we can blend it all together and form some type of championship chemistry.
Here's what Dusty had to say about what it takes to be at a major program like Michigan.
I felt for the last 20 to 30 years, I'd been preparing for this position the entire time. So I never felt that I was in over my head or I wasn't going to be able to do the job. There were a lot of days when I thought to myself, how did this happen? How did we get here? And then usually I would just think, man, because I've been around really, really good players and other good coaches, And so very, very fortunate in its circumstances as much as anything. But, you know, when it starts to happen, it almost feels like a dream because, like I said, this was never the intent. And I want to have a great day of preparation today and tomorrow and really, really enjoy the people that I'm around. And when you enjoy the work, it never feels like a job. And that's how it is for me. So I had to pinch myself about 3,000 times the last couple of years that, you know, people would reach out and you'd say, how do they even know who I am? So it's definitely an honor and a privilege, but I also know that it's a result of surrounding yourself with really, really high quality people. I'm very, very lucky and blessed to be in this profession.
How lucky are we that the state of Michigan now holds bragging rights to two of college basketball's best coaches and teams? One, of course, is the great Tom Izzo at Michigan State, and the other is the state of Michigan's newest star, Dusty May. I love college football, in particular, University of Michigan college football. But Dusty May, you've made me a big fan of Michigan basketball, and I'm really excited to be cheering you on for years to come.
Ryder Sloan, do you think that this team could do some damage in the NCAA tournament?
Maybe. There's a lot of really good teams out there, but I definitely think that Michigan has a chance to beat those teams and make a good run.
Our thanks to Ryder Sloan for that. Our thanks to Ben Frakes and Dan Dickerson, to Aiden Novak and Christy Dosh, and to Cody Stedman and Jamie Edmonds. I'm Johnny Kane. I want to thank you for listening to this week's edition of Open Mic on WJR.